from KQED.
From KQED News, I'm Andrea Kissick with Quest, our weekly series exploring Northern California's science and environment. This year marks the 75th anniversary of an icon.
The country watched with fascination as the spinning of the mighty cables proceeded hundreds of feet above San Francisco Bay. The majesty of the Golden Gate Bridge was apparent even before the great span was complete.
When it opened in 1937, the Golden Gate Bridge was the longest suspension bridge ever built, constructed in one of the world's most challenging settings. For the men who poured the concrete and drove in each steel rivet, it was a life-changing experience, as KQED's Amy Standen reports.
Fred Brusati was born in 1911, raised in San Rafael. His parents were Italian immigrants, and there wasn't a lot of money. So after a year of high school, he went looking for work.
So one day I heard that they were going to start the Golden Gate Bridge. And I says, well, I'll try it. I've never been up 746 feet, but I'll try it anyhow.
It was the middle of the Great Depression. Mary Curry, a spokeswoman for the bridge district, says getting a job on the Golden Gate Bridge was like winning the lottery.
The men would line up and wait for a chance to get a job, literally hoping that someone would hurt themselves so they'd be the next guy to get the job.
You hardly ever slowed down to a trot, you know. There was men waiting right there for a job.
Slim Lambert, a cowboy from Washington State, worked as a roustabout, carrying equipment, pouring concrete, making about $10 a day.
And lots of men were fired right on the spot if the boss thought they were malingering a little bit.
It was the first time anyone had tried to build a suspension bridge tower in a span of open ocean, and the conditions, above and below, were harsh. Powerful currents threatened to drag away the divers who were working on the bridge support, and up on the towers, workers stuffed newspapers into their jackets to keep warm.
The gate was the coldest place I've ever worked.
Martin Adams was born in Arkansas in 1912. Like these others, he was recorded in 1987 as part of an oral history project by San Francisco State University. All of these men have since died.
You put all the clothes on you could get on and worked hard, or you'd freeze.
Cold was the least of it. Mary Curry says workers on the bridge didn't just fear death, they expected it.
Well, at the time, the industry standard was that for every $1 million spent, there would be a loss of life, one loss.
The bridge cost $35 million, but engineer Joseph Strauss, who headed the project, was determined to keep workers safe. Hard hats were required, and he insisted on one feature that Mary Curry says was at the time completely novel, a safety net.
It was a $130,000 expense at the time, which was considered an exorbitant expense, but he really fought for it, and it saved the lives of 19 men.
For nearly 4 years, the entire project seemed charmed with an almost perfect safety record. And then, one day, everything changed. The task that day, on February 17, 1937, was to remove a wooden scaffold that had been built underneath the bridge platform. To reach it, workers had hung a temporary catwalk. Each time they stripped off a section of wood, workers would move the catwalk another few feet.
And when they started to move it,
Martin Adams.
That's when it went down. 9:20 in the morning, it went down.
The catwalk hadn't been attached properly. It broke off and plunged into the ocean, dragging the safety net with it.
See, I was working on the catwalk right there around midspan, and somebody says, a catwalk is falling.
Fred Brusati rushed over, saw a man clinging to a piece of steel. He and a few others threw him a rope and hauled the man up.
The man had a pipe in his mouth. He didn't drop the pipe or nothing. He just started to walk toward San Francisco, and I never did see him back there again.
The real tragedy was below. 12 men had fallen 220 feet into the water.
People ask me, what went through your mind?
One of them was Slim Lambert.
The only thing that went through my mind was survival. I knew that to have a prayer to survive, I had to hit the water feet first.
But when Lambert hit the water, his legs tangled in the safety net.
And that's the only time I panicked during that whole thing. I was caught in the net, and the net was headed for the bottom.
Lambert plunged so deep that when he surfaced, he was bleeding from his ears. Bridge debris was everywhere.
I got a couple of planks together and for myself at first, and then I saw Fred thrashing about.
That was 24-year-old Fred Dumitson. Lambert pulled him up on the planks and waited.
I heard this this powerboat coming in, putt, putt, putt.
A crab fisherman coming in from sea.
And he was almost by, and he took another look around, and his eye hit me. And what a relief. I figured, my gosh, we're going to make it.
Dumitson died on the crab boat, but Lambert and another man survived the fall. Today there's a plaque on the western side of the bridge dedicated to the 10 men who died that day. Mary Curry says the workers she's talked to don't really remember the cold or the danger. They felt lucky to be there. At a time when the rest of the country was struggling to get by, six Bay Area counties agreed to spend what seemed like a fortune on a suspension bridge longer than any the world had ever seen.
It was the people, really, that had to rise up and see this as a symbol of hope, inspiration, imagination, stick-to-itiveness. You know, they saw this bridge as something that would change their lives.
And that, she says, was a pretty gutsy thing to have done. The bridge turned 75 on May 27th. I'm Amy Standen, KQED News.
And one final note. The last living link to the construction of the Golden Gate Bridge passed away last week. Jack Balestrieri was 95 years old. I'm Andrea Kissick, KQED News.
Support for Quest is provided by the S.D. Bechtel Jr. Foundation, the David B. Gold Foundation, and the Dirk and Charlene Cabsonell Foundation.